Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is Tuesday, November 30th, 2021. And this is Ralph Pointer, What's Happening? And this program is an analysis of oppression, which requires an anatomy of imperialism and colonialism. And if you understand what colonialism is, can you spell slavery, then you understand why we have political prisoners and why it is our duty to free them. Because every human right that we are standing on today is a result of what they did and sacrificed for us yesterday. All right. Without further ado, Ralph Pointer, what happening?
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. We meet once again on this occasion, and it is always a sad occasion because we have too few victories that bringing our political prisoners home would represent. But the theme of our program tonight is stated this way. It would appear the human movement is such that at any moment in history, there are too few that understand possibilities of existence that would benefit all who inhabit this planet and are willing to act on this understanding. This is a thought that came to me, and I'm trying to say what we need to say in a different way every week, and this is what we're talking about, political prisoners. And we're talking about a situation that took place some 52-odd years ago. We all know what that was. Chairman Fred Hampton and Mark Clark were martyred by this government. And what it says is what the government fears the most is the ability to organize. And Chairman Fred Hampton had that great ability to organize, not only organize as many of us organize, the petty bourgeoisie, the petty bourgeoisie aspiring, the so-called middle class, but the people. He was able to go in the streets in Chicago and talk to the young men who had either lost their way, who were driven to a position of what they considered as terrible drug dealing, until the government and corporations themselves jumped in on the drug dealing. You know all about the richness of Walmart. Now we find out their pharmacies were making money hand over fist in the opioid situation. But in the corporations making of money with opioids, drugs, nobody went to jail. But what happened is they give us the desire that we need Nazi mobiles. They deny us jobs. They deny us education. And the only field open to us is, or one of the few fields that are open to us, is the drug field. And then they begin to take it back. Oh, drugs are so bad. And one of the things that always grabbed me for years was how it affected our culture. And I remember the story of Thelonious Monk. All of you people in music know how important he was to the development of this form we call jazz. Caught in New York, going to the airport by an Irish cop, and he had marijuana, a joint in the car, and his music license was taken, and no musician would touch him until the total junkie, and I hate to use that word, total person enslaved by drugs, Charlie Parker, and everybody knew it, but he was a moneymaker, and Norman Granz was cleaning up with the Charlie Parker records, and one day Charlie Parker, who was supposed to do a record date, said, gee, I want Thelonious Monk. And the answer was, you know, he doesn't have a card. His card was taken by a local Irish policeman in New York. And Charlie just said, well, I'm not going to do the date. He was as much into his getting away from reality that he could say that, I'm not doing this. And, of course, money was introduced, the question of money. And so the date went forward with Thelonious Monk as his pianist. And this is how this upside down, no, it's not upside down. This is how it's intended. As Lynn Stewart told us, the law is whatever they say at any given time. And if black people are using marijuana, they come out with a film, Marijuana Madness, all of this nonsense, and they use an excuse to put black folk in jail. And I remember 60 years ago preaching over and over to as many audiences as I could get to that there is no war on drugs, there's a war on us. And if the opioid situation, the fentanyl situation has not proven that real, the marijuana situation, if it has not proven that real, no war on drugs, but a war on us, I don't know what would. And so here we are on the 52nd anniversary of the martyrdom of Chairman Fred Hampton and Mark Clark. And I remember saying that we can't let this situation pass, and we're going to be more thorough on this situation tomorrow evening on our program at WBAI. It'll be every Wednesday from 8 to 9, WBAI Pacifica, 99.5 on your FM dial. We will get into it, and we will be talking about our king, Fred Hampton, our queen, Mother Comrade, and our prince, Chairman Fred Hampton, Jr. And he is our political prisoners, our ex-political prisoners. Those who died in the struggle have been forgotten by our masses, and it is our job as political folk to remind our people, the people that were saved, the people that they attempted to save, must reach out. It is unconscionable. Leonard Peltier is still in. It is unconscionable the times served by our political prisoners. And as Lynn says, the law is whatever they say it is. And it's different for political prisoners, as all of our political prisoners know. And it was never said better than when Sekou Odinga said, "You know there are political prisoners in America because they do not treat criminals the way they treat us." And so we are remembering Chairman Fred Hampton. We're honoring the family of Chairman Fred Hampton, Mother Comrade, and that's our queen, Mother Comrade. Chairman Fred Hampton is the king, and Chairman Fred Hampton, Jr. is the prince, and you know they're out there because Fred Hampton was in his mother's body when Chairman Fred Hampton, Sr. was murdered, and the queen and the prince, have been fighting this struggle for liberation before and since, and continuing, and like I say, tomorrow night on our program on WBAI, we will have Chairman Fred Hampton, Jr. speaking on the subject that he speaks most about. That's our liberation, where we go, and do tune in and do call in. Not tonight. We were 99.5 FM on Pacifica Radio, and we'll have that discussion, but we will continue our discussion of political prisoners tonight and all subjects that are important to our people. And so, without further ado, it's time to continue our program of politics and poetry that educates and entertains, and the great Professor Louis is with us this evening to give us more knowledge. Professor Louis, microphone is open.
Money, 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 right from the start. Money in the brain, money in the heart. Money, 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 I hear you say you want more money every day. Well, it's the root of all evil. That might be true, but I know you're glad you got some money on you. And I'm not mad. I'm not sad. I'm kind of glad I got some, too. So we beg, borrow, and steal. But what's the big deal? It's only paper, and that's for real. What's so hot? Who cares if you got it? It's just a little piece of paper in your pocket. Now, you might say something really old. Get on up here big and bold. It's only paper, but it stands for gold. You could say it quiet. You could scream and holler. But there's no more gold behind the dollar. Back in the day, 1973, right on out there for you and me and everyone to see, the United States went off the gold standard. Unwind your mind, you can understand it. There's no more gold, no box, no locks. Don't drop your socks. There's no more gold down in Fort Knox, and we will see the bill sooner or later. What you got in your pocket is a piece of paper, and on that paper we write checks, get stocks, bonds, whatever's next, options, futures, credit card, all based on something we ain't got, hedge fund, derivative, all paper and plastic. Something's got to give, because it's not an act. It's a fact, my friend. All paper money comes to a bad end. That's an old, old rule. It won't break or bend. All paper money comes to a bad end. And you could say that's a terrible mess. The U.S. government might never confess. But every freaking day, your money's worth less. Put it in the bank or put it in your pocket. Your money's worth less than the day you got it. And when that dollar takes a big fall, the billionaire don't worry at all. He got 10, 11 brokers out in the hall. And when U.S. dollars are going down, he checks out the other money going round. Before your little breakfast hits your little tummy, he trades his dollars for German money or Chinese, whatever money's good, and leave you broke. Back in the neighborhood where you pay $4 for a loaf of bread and the landlord wants thousands just to lay your head. So it's only paper, but we never refuse it. First and last, we got to ask, why do we use it? Now, you might get up and make some noise, but nobody ever asked for your voice. We use dollars because we got no choice. Down here in the land of milk and honey, what is it that stands behind the money? For your mama, papa, daughter, or son, for every single body under the sun, what makes the system run? It's cops and billy clubs, soldiers and guns. No one never ever asked for your voice. We use dollars because we got no choice. All over the world, power comes from the money system and the barrel of guns. And you could say, I want my money back, but you're hooked like crack. And here's the fact. No one ever asked you, Jack, because money is a tool for who's going to rule over the wise man and the fool. And there's some things that money brings, a little song that money sings. It's never about what people need. It's all about power and greed. Check out the whole world, east to west. It's about some get more and some get less. Look up in front, look back behind. Check your history book down through time. Money is something to keep you in line. And does that got to make you mad or sad? If it's only paper, what makes it bad? It's what we do to get it, what we do when we got it. Did we think about it? Maybe we forgot it. How do we make our money? How do we spend it, Sonny? How you get, how you spend, how do you live? In the end, do you take or give? Because at the risk of getting kind of sappy, money don't seem to make people happy. Look up in the mansion, look down in the dump. How happy really is Donald Trump? Rich people want more and more, day and night. Why so much more if you feel all right? So money's not everything. That might sound corny, but you can't make love with it when you get horny. It's bold, it's cold, but an old story has been told. What good's money if you lose your soul? Straight up, Jack, not whack like crack. You could sell your soul, but you can't buy it back. And if you do not worship money, sure as you're born, the soul you save might be your own. So the money's funny and the change is strange, and there's a whole world to rearrange. And before this song gets too long, whatever you think is right or wrong, before the bell's gonna ring, before the fat lady gets to sing, we feel better when we do the right thing. And there is one thing that we know. We're going to reap just what we sow. You're broke and hungry or a big man in town. What goes around will come around. And far and near, it might be queer, but money's still here and the road is clear. Throw everyone in the whole world right down the middle. No one with too much and no one with too little. Treat your neighbors just like yourself. Same money for them, you and me, and for everybody else. Forget the rich and forget the poor. Close up the bank and open up your doors. Money, 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 right from the start. Money in the brain, money in the heart. Money, 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 I hear people say. They want more money every day.
Well, thank you again, Professor Louis. Options, futures, derivatives, hedge funds, etc., all scams to control the world. And as I say, we get educated and entertained at the same time. Remember, the program is archived. You can look it up. You can dial in and listen to this poetry, or you can send, and we have to start selling some of Professor Louis' CDs. He's got some great stuff out there over the years. I listen to it myself when I feel down and I need a little pick-me-up or a little entertainment. I grab a Professor Louis CD. Brothers and sisters, up next is Liberator Poet Nzinga. Your microphone is open. Give us your wisdom this evening.
Good evening, everyone. As usual, Brother Ralph, Sister Betty, thank you so much for having me. Just wanted to make one point because you were talking about the political business. It brought to mind the gentleman, Kevin Strickland, who was exonerated last week after spending 43 years in a prison in Missouri. He's 62 years old. He was in prison for a crime he did not commit, even though all the evidence at the time and subsequent to his imprisonment showed that he was not guilty. One witness recanted their confession or their statement. The person that supposedly committed the crime said that Kevin Strickland was not there, yet they still let this man spend 43 years in jail. And the kicker is that they did a GoFundMe page for the brother. They raised $1.5 million, but he can't receive any of the funds that go into Missouri because only individuals who are exonerated by DNA testing can receive financial assistance. Because he was exonerated due to evidence, he can't receive the money. Sad. So it's not only political prisoners, it's black men, I think, in general. And it's just so sad. But I just wanted to make that point. So the title of my poem tonight is Black Independent and Radical Politics. So there's never a simple solution to a problem that is complex. There is no simplistic way to seriously address a system of government that uses shady politics, one that creates policies that feign social change and economic reform while perpetuating colonialism and capitalism as the concealed norm. There are many who advocate and are emboldened by their belief that black independent and radical politics is what black people need. And while we know there will be those who dissent with the movement towards black and radical politics, it is urgent now. Therefore, we must not relent. For our problems will never be solved by this government. So we must proceed with the radical overhaul of the racist systems currently in place. And we must stand united as one black race. We must not allow division to keep us apart. We need a strong army for the task on which we're about to embark. We must not be distracted by the mass confusion because we'll need all our soldiers for this revolution. So as we move forward towards the mission to achieve black independent and radical politics, we must bear in mind that the situation is dire, in mind that it will require someone very, very extraordinary. We will need one who is a revolutionary. Thank you so much for having me all the time. I appreciate it, and I'm honored to be with you guys on this call each Tuesday night.
Well, thank you so much, Sister Nzinga. We listen to the poetry. We learn from the poetry. We have political prisoners and victims of political oppression or political systems. They are different people, but we must look to support all of them. And next, we right on time, we have a very extraordinary human being, a ex-political prisoner, is out here with us now. Jan Lahman, your microphone is open. And Jan Lahman, one of our warriors who fought and sacrificed. And fortunately, he is with us today, and we love every moment. Jan, give us a bit of your wisdom. Your microphone
Well, hello,
is
everybody.
Open.
Hello,
How you
everybody.
Doing?
I'm good, and I'm, as always, first of all, I'm just learning and listening and just so glad that, you know, voices like coming out of this show are out here, because people are listening to them, and a lot of people that aren't listening yet need to listen, because whether it's in the form of a poem or in the form of a report, what's being said here is just so absolutely true and so absolutely important as these various holidays and times when they want us to spend even more money, you know, they really push that down on us. We do have to remember, you know, the political prisoners that are in these cages and that have been there for decades and decades. I mean, I myself was there 37 years, and that's insane to think about now that I've been out here some months. But there's people there, like, you know, a few that stick out in my mind, and these are close friends of mine as well as, you know, long-standing political prisoners. We spent many a year or decade in various of the worst camps that exist across this country, those federal penitentiaries. And I'm talking about, like, Sundiata Kolli. I mean, there's a brother that just is so full of just understanding and determination, of strength, even after 40, like, close to 50 years in captivity at this point, and getting old. I mean, he's 84 years old, and he always kept himself physically in good shape, fighting shape, because he was a soldier from a young age, and he's still a soldier today. But time, and especially in those camps where food is bad, where medical care is almost non-existent, where they allow these diseases and these plagues and whatnot to, like, run rampant. They don't give people the kind of even minimal level of medical care they need, and so, you know, especially the elderly comrades, it's almost like, I mean, they're just waiting for them to die. Let's be honest, they want them to die on behind the wall. They don't want them out here to share even one word and one thought. So as we approach these holidays, we think of our families and so forth, which is very positive. Nothing wrong with them. We have to remember these comrades, Jamil Alameen. You know, of course, Dr. Mutul Shakur. Of course, Mumia. I mean, there's so many that have been locked up for decades. So as we approach these holidays, and as we think of, you know, positive things and our family and loved ones, let's also think about those, as you so well put, those fighters fighting for the people, always fighting for the people that are still behind those, as you say, death camp walls, because that's what they really are. So with that thought in mind, I'm ready to listen to more wisdom and culture here as the show progresses.
Well, thank you so much. Coming from a very extraordinary person, 37 years on the inside, and listen to how he has kept it together. And one thing, when I did my skid bit, which was called in the day, when you do short time behind the walls, they say be careful not to become institutionalized. You've heard a voice that never became institutionalized, and he's out here helping us. And I think of long-term prisoners that we were successful in freeing, Jaleel Montague. What was that, 49 years? But let us go to our dear sister, Ann Lamb.
Before we go to Sister Ann, I noticed there's another 740, and the last four digits are 6704. Because it's from the same area, did you want to say a few words? 6704.
No.
You don't have to. Okay. Thank you,
no,
and you're
I'm just
welcome.
Listening and learning.
Thank you. We're honored to have you. Okay, Sister Ann, your mic is open. And after Sister Ann, we gotta go back to Boston because I think Brother Kazi is in the house. Go ahead,
yes,
Sister Ann.
Yes, Brother Kazi is in the house, and they are having an event on December 4th for Fred Hampton and Mark Clark. So he can tell you more details of that. Absolutely. I wanted to read a little update I just received from our comrades at New York City Anarchist Black Cross about a person named Daniel Hale. Now, people may or may not know about Daniel Hale. He was a whistleblower about the drone warfare, okay? So, and he is being very punished for that, as Jan just said, in some of the more Kafkaesque areas of the prison industrial complex. Last month, after an excruciating long wait in a regional jail, drone whistleblower Daniel Hale was finally transferred to a federal prison facility. In most respects, this was a significant upgrade in living conditions, but it also meant that Daniel was placed in the restrictive, quote-unquote, Communications Management Unit, CMU, one of the lesser-known Kafkaesque legacies of the Bush administration's war on terror, so-called. These facilities have stricter limits on correspondence and much heavier surveillance than other facilities. The effect is to distance Daniel from friends and supporters and to impede his contact with the outside world at a time when drone strikes have come under closer scrutiny from mainstream journalists than ever before. With the belated media attention, more Americans saw what Daniel had been trying to tell them for years. We may never get a full accounting of how many innocent lives, how many whole families were destroyed in those years the government spent prosecuting a voice of conscience instead of admitting the truth about civilian casualties in drone warfare. Daniel's journey took him to the dark heart of the war on terror abroad, and as reward for blowing the whistle, he has been sent to its darkest corner on American soil, a facility that has been dubbed Guantanamo North. This will be his first Thanksgiving incarcerated after struggling to live under the shadow of an Espionage Act prosecution for the past 7 years. I hope you'll write to Daniel using the mailing address and guidelines here. Communication through the CMU can be slow and cumbersome, but he deeply appreciates hearing from you. He also urged supporters to donate to his Welcome Home fundraiser to cover his debts and prison expenses so that he can start fresh and finally move forward with his life upon release. Daniel's prosecution is one of the most egregious cases of retaliation and repression I have witnessed. It is exactly those kinds of cases that led us to start Whisper. Our base of small donors has allowed us the independence to support clients like Daniel when no one else can or will. We are the only organization dedicated to providing direct legal representation for national security whistleblowers who lack the financial means or the mainstream political support to defend themselves against the full fury of the U.S. government. So this is a case that a lot of people don't know about, but this is what happens when you're working for the U.S. government of, and you see something horrible and atrocious, like innocent civilians being killed by drones, and you speak up against it. What happens to you? You get prosecuted, persecuted, and put into a CMU that is known as Guantanamo North. So, you know, people need to pay attention to what's going on around here, man. This is, you know, major repression. I know that Marshal Eddie Conway was saying on the Real News Network last week, former political prisoners are calling this COINTELPRO 2021. So let us get prepared for the upcoming wave of repression, and let's get ready to fight this system, as we have been doing and as our brothers and sisters behind the walls have been doing for all these many years. And our brothers and sisters who have been behind the walls and have come back out have also continued to do the same work that they were doing before they went in. So let's, you know, put our nose to the grindstone. And also, today is Giving Tuesday, right? So if you haven't given any money to anybody, or if you have some extra money you would like to give, there is our brother, Russell Maroon Schultz, and his family needs our support. So there is a GoFundMe, and people can donate some money for the family. And that is gofund.me/14, F as in Frank, B as in boy, 0, F as in Frank, 33. And if you don't want to remember all that, you can go to jerichoNY.org And right on the front page, we have a whole update about Russell LaRoon Schoetz, including this GoFundMe, and you can just click on the button and donate some money. Because Teresa Schoetz says, first and foremost, my siblings, Sharon, Russell, and myself would like to thank you for your continued support. LaRoon's time with us isn't long. Therefore, I come to you for assistance. With your financial support, LaRoon's granddaughter and great-grands were able to meet their grandfather. Their first attempt wasn't granted because LaRoon had a three-hour medical treatment. Eventually, the grands and great-grands were able to visit LaRoon and are looking forward to visiting again. Presently, it's been an emotional roller coaster. The reality of losing my father is real. He's no longer in prison, but at night I cry, often reliving that humble day when LaRoon was released to hospice care. I know he won't be with us for long. He's losing weight, grumpy, yet very caring. I'd like to thank everyone for your phone calls, the visits, the kind words, the past campaign support, and your financial assistance. LaRoon spent 49 years in prison, 23 years in solitary confinement, and is presently battling stage 4 cancer. So if people want to give something for Giving Tuesday, there's a very worthy cause that you can give it to. Once again, go to jerichoandy.org and look for that link under our update on Russell LaRoon Schoetz. And that is all I have to say today, except what's the call? Free them all.
Free them all. Well, free them so all. Much for that. And as Ann has told us, go to the Jericho website, because the young political ecological prisoners are getting terrorist enhancements, which means they'll double their time or triple their time for trying to save Mother Earth. You will find their names, not so well known, on that website. And so we must do our work. COINTELPRO 2021. Ooh, that's a good way of saying it. And we must remember the families of our political prisoners and Sharon and Teresa Schoetz, ever since they were adults, were working to free their father. And it's just heartwarming when they changed places. One was raising money by just working every day, and the other was going out. Teresa was going out speaking on behalf of her father. And every political family is going through it, but they showed it so clearly. Next up, we must go to Boston again. Kazukazi Torre, 0072. Your microphone is open. Give us your words of wisdom for this week.
Thank you, brothers, sisters. How y'all be?
Yeah, we're
man, it's
being
really
up.
A great show.
Thank
it's
you
really
so very
great
much.
Show, Ralph. It's really a great show. It reminds me of, back in the day, there was a newspaper, that came out. It was Liberation News Service. You remember that one?
Yes,
and
I do.
What they were in El Salvador and Africa and a lot of places. And a lot of the stories that were coming from them were stories of the grunts, the people that was on the ground doing the work, and it reminded me, so much of this show. Right on, man.
Well, thank you.
That's
a wonderful comparison. Really appreciate it.
Yes, and coming off that fast for Leonard, and I hope everybody signed the petition. And we can move that forward. And like Ann was saying earlier, we are doing Jericho Boston is put with Black Lives Matter Boston are doing a Curb Fest on the 4th. And I think something's coming out around, for Fred, because it is on the 4th, from the Spirit of Mandela. They're putting together something to honor Fred also. And that's going to be good. So we're keeping organizing, keep building, keep moving. And like the sister that said, I think it was Nzinga earlier, the one that spoke after Professor Louis.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like she was saying, we're really at that time, man, in Dyer's, and after that verdict from the Spirit of Mandela, we should really be focusing on moving together, building together, closer, you know, breaking down all the sectarian stuff, you know, because we don't got time for all that stuff anymore, man. You know, people need to drop all the pretenses and come together, like George said, settle the quarrels and all the little petty differences, you know, and do what we got to do. Or we ain't going to make it, man. You know,
well,
it was the right thing.
Somebody who's experienced behind the wall.
You know what I'm saying?
Kazi Touré was there behind the wall, and he's given us the information, but we must remember, folks, when we get our allies, we must kind of examine who they are, because there's so many people who seem to be in the movement and obviously are working against the movement. So we have to be careful, but we have to be persistent, as Kazi tells us, growing the movement. Tough job. Sister Betty.
Before we go to
right
Sister Nelly, I want to Brother Kazi. Because he and people like Jan and Ann, they always try to educate people, but they always know how to relate to people like they're human. But I want to remind everybody, the enhancement terrorist legislation, I do believe that came out while the good brother was the president. All right. So let's not think that just because the acts has a wooden handle, okay, that it's a brother. Trees in a forest, don't call the axe a brother. And this brother really was an axe. These enhancement terrorist legislation that they throw out against especially European Americans who side with people of color in the struggle for freedom. We must acknowledge that we have traitors among us. And we need to call them out. And one of the ones I'm calling out is that so-called sister in California who's going after Cheze because he's saying they locked up our young people. Let's turn them loose. And she's going after him. All right? Just like Tish James tried to mess with Brother Jaleel. We got to call these traitors out. And I appreciate Kazi, because he's a decent person. But I ain't unifying with people like that.
No,
very.
No. I'm not saying that, sister. I'm not saying that.
I know.
That
we know. We understand.
I'm just saying.
They all have to be better. And they all have to be better. And, you know, like I was telling Fred today, me and Fred was kicking, you know, today about
uh-huh.
like how, you know, how they try to paint, you know, instead of making that movie about his father, they made it about the snitch, you know, and they try to draw
yes.
sympathy to the black community on it for the snitch. You know what I mean? And I mean, his head should have been rolling, man. His head should have rolled. You know what I'm saying? We can't have that amongst us, man. We ain't got no time
very,
for that, man.
Very well.
Nat Turner, Denmark, Bessie, all of them were traitors, man. I mean, all them uprisings had snitches in them, man. You know what
yes.
I'm saying?
There you go.
So,
there
no,
you go. All right. Love you, Kazi. Without
yeah.
further ado, we want to Sister Nelly. Yes.
Three of them all. That's the call. Sister yeah. Nelly Bailey, your microphone is open.
Oh, thank you very much. What a interesting and beautiful program. I'll start with Professor Louis. He is so right about this endless printing of paper dollar not backed by a gold standard that Richard Nixon took the country off in 1971. It is part of the crisis of U.S. imperialism, and it starts with the dollar, which is the global currency, and it is indeed in crisis, and we see it every day. As a matter of fact, we see it more pronounced in these internal colonies governed by a police state. But there are problems brewing ahead. It's already here. 30 million to 40 million Americans, households, not Americans. I mean, what is that anyway? U.S. households are facing the crisis of eviction. Let me repeat that.
Oh my God.
30 to to 40 million households are at risk of eviction. It is estimated that the rents owed by households is about $70 billion. And this is not a problem. Let me go back a little bit because I want to go back to something that Professor Louis and the others were talking about. After the fascist carnage of World War II, of which the U.S. was part of that fascist element in that they bombed Hiroshima and Nagasaki, that they came together, 50 nations came together in 1945 after that fascist carnage, and they came together to create the United Nations. And the most important thing about the United Nations, which Malcolm talked about, taking our case to the United Nations, as did Paul Robeson, was the what undergirded the United Nations was the Universal Declaration, the Declaration of Universal Human Rights. And included in that, among other things, was a decent standard of living and also a right to housing, because the whole, the impetus for the creation of the United Nations was that every man, woman, and child was afforded the right of human dignity, which is something that Malcolm talked about, which is something that King talked about. And let's deal with the issue of housing, because before I said 30 to 40 million people are at risk of eviction. U.S. households pay from 30 to 50% of their income for housing. And housing was never viewed as a human right, but rather by the U.S. government as a commodity. It's about money and making money and reaping greater profits. That's what it's about. So we have these internal colonies across the country, poor and working class, blacks and Latinx, and others, immigrant groups, and they are, meaning the U.S. ruling class, they are determined to push poor and working people, in particular political people, such as the political prisoners that we have who fought against this push into an abyss of austerity, which means you don't have enough to eat, you don't have enough to pay your rent, austerity and death. That's what we're looking at now. And what are we doing about this crisis? Because it is solvable. The amount of money that is paid to the U.S. Defense Department, I think, is something like $770 billion. And we know that it's more than that because they have these black ops across the world. They have AFRICOM, where they are literally in every country in Africa. And they are competing with a rising star in the East, which is China, which is why we have all of this bellicosity. Oh, we're going to get them and look what they're doing. And also Russia. These folks, the ruling class, are so insane that the Nord Stream pipeline that goes from Russia to Germany, because we know gas prices are just out of whack nowadays, The U.S. government wants the Germany and Europe, Western Europe, to give up having heat for the winter in the name of their hegemonic global dominance. And the world is increasingly saying, no, no way, no way, no way. So as we look at our political prisoners here and their defense of our lives, their defense of our communities, we have to step to the plate. And as Sister Betty said, you can do something because you can support the political prisoners. You can support the Schultz family. You can do whatever it is necessary to do toward building that united front, of resistance, of defiance, and that we will no longer go along and play second fiddle or your servant as you continue to rob, dehumanize the rest of the world, most of whom that rest of the world are people of color. They're not Europeans, not at all. But the time has come, and as Professor Louis talked about, his prophecy is coming into being every single day. Every single day, they are losing ground. They are no longer the dominant force, and it remains to be seen how long the U.S. dollar will be the global currency. We have to seize the time and the understanding that this U.S. imperialism is in crisis. It is collapsing. And that will hold us together for that day that we will rise, hopefully with the rest of the world of people of color, to overthrow this monstrosity as it has eaten the life of people as well as the environment. And this, I believe, we will be successful. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for that, Nellie Bailey. You say it all. You say it so well. And when we talk about our allies, as Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. says it over and over, people of conscience. We must recognize people of conscience. We must recognize them as our brothers and sisters. The few that we opened our program, it would appear that the human movement is such that at any moment in history, there are too few that understand possibilities of existence that would benefit all who inhabit this planet and are willing to act on its understanding. Yes, this is what we are about, and thank you, Sister Nellie Bailey. And we go next to Professor Joel Myers. Your microphone is open. Educate us.
Folks, we've extended the time, but let's be mindful of the time. We want to get everybody in. And thank you, Sister Nellie. I do believe that this society is crumbling. I do believe capitalism is crashing. But let's be real. It's going to crash on us because we're on the bottom. We're going to feel it first. That's why we got to get our act together the way Brother Kazi said.
Brother Joel, your microphone is...
Taking off from what Betty just said, it's that old song, instead of landing on Plymouth Rock is landing on us. And that's a thanks, well, I was going to say Thanksgiving, but the real name for it is misgiving or thanks-taking, because that's really what it is a celebration of, and the capitalist ethic and the commercialism is especially intensified at the time of these so-called holidays, which have, in the case of Thanksgiving, a celebration of genocide, we have to remember, and but also a building up of the consciousness around that and the resistance movement in terms of the day of mourning, which has set a precedent of commemorating Thanksgiving from the direction that it really comes from and uniting a resistance movement against the system of genocide. Now, Christmas and New Year, not exactly the same genocide as Thanksgiving in terms of their origins, but in terms of the being turned into their opposites. Imagine they take the name of Jesus, somebody that was put on the cross because he was leading people to stand up for the rich. He said, "Sooner shall a camel pass through the eye of a needle than a rich man through the gates unto heaven." And he was somebody who stood with the poor and who preached a sharing and working ethic instead of the ethic that was dominant at that time in the Roman Empire of stealing. And before the word had been invented, genocide. That's how these empires are all based. And now also Nelly was talking about the collapse of the dollar. And that's there are 30 and 40 million evictions scheduled to take place. And that's all tied to the collapse of the dollar because there are three largely parasitic factors in the capitalist system that go together. And that's finance, insurance, and real estate. Finance, insurance, and real estate, because that's the area where all three of them together exploit the interest that accrues to the wealth that's owned without actually producing the commodities and the products of value, unlike the other industries. Often they stifle the other industries and increasingly monopolize them. I was listening to a show today, like people think of Pepsi-Cola and Coca-Cola as competitors. And it turns out that if you look at the top of their board of directors, it's the same people. And it's the same people that control big pharma, the medical industry, the pharmaceutical industry, and so on. The same people increasingly are monopolizing everything. And that's and at the same time, they have taken all the backing out of the dollar. So even though you have some money in your pocket, right out of your pocket, that money is being stolen by the fact that that dollar has nothing to back it up and it's going to come to an end. And already we hear people like Klaus Schwab, who's the major spokesperson for the World Economic Forum that meets in Davos, Switzerland, and who's trying to pull together a world economy based on robbing the entire world and collaboration of just like of different corporations that you think are competitors, collaboration between the various governments, some by coercive means, others by their regular nature, to pull together. And what he's been talking about is that you will own nothing, you will rent everything, and you will be happy. What he means by that is it's really a threat that if you object to this, it's like you better be happy with what we're leaving you. And this is all also connected with the entire COVID thing, where people like Bill Gates have spoken about the need to reduce the population of the world to to save the planet, to save the planet, to save the planet for the handful of billionaires and trillionaires that want to own everything. And we have to unite against them, because if we don't, if we allow them to divide us and conquer us, then with all of our numbers, that can overturn them in a relatively short period of time. Things are going to go very much in the opposite direction. And already what's being discussed at the World Economic Forum are measures to digitalize the dollar. In other words, you wouldn't have any more dollars. You would have a government credit card. And with that, the government can control all of the money that you used to think is in your pocket, and they can track everything that you, every dollar that you spend and every dollar that comes to you to control all the connections between each individual and the world. And the word their individual is important, because it means that we become atomized unless we are organized, unless we're not fighting as one individual or another individual, but that we come together in the way that we're being brought together in suffering and pain and poverty. We have to organize together to move things in the reverse direction. And one of the primary areas in this, we can't really move forward without it, is what kind of a movement forgets about its political prisoners. The political prisoners are the people who struggled the hardest and who set became the role models of what we should all be. We should all be fighters against this system that is fighting against all of us, that especially in this country, where the entire history of it is the genocide of the native people and the enslavement of kidnapped African people brought here to be slaves, and the legacy of that. Yet they preach to the entire world that they're a great democracy actually they're the biggest robbers and plunderers of the world. They're the biggest killers, the biggest liars, because lying has to go with all the other crimes to cover it up. And we have to stop buying their hype, stop allowing us to turn our energies against each other, and instead get together and fight them together under the leadership of those who are not bought off, those who are oppressed, those who have the greatest basis for fighting back, but also leading the entire rest of humanity that still has a sense of humanity, leading the working class, leading the middle class, and even some of the upper class against the system of modern, transmodern slavery. That's what we're, and transhuman slavery. In other words, they're trying to, they look at humanity itself as an enemy. That's the outlook of the system and of the misleadership that it shapes.
Well, thank you for that, Joel. You've given me something I'm going to have to listen to again when you talk about the being ripped off, the people being ripped off every day. Our dollar purchases less than it did the day before. It's been going on for some 60, 70 years. And when they talk about tracking money, as in tracking drug money, how much drug money is used by the banks to sustain this economy? South Florida has been a drug economy for 30, 40 years. And, of course, they don't track that. And when they said they were going to track drug money that was gone through Panama, the corporations panicked. And then the government had to say out loud, no, not you, just those other people. And so they will track who they need, who they want to track, who they want to oppress, and they will support also the people they want to support. Thank you for that, Joel, because it's very important when you talk about finance, insurance, and real estate, because as you see, every day you turn on your television, you see our Social Security insurance is being insured one more time, and then they insure it again. And so each time that they insure, you're paying for your insurance. So now they have a Social Security system that they keep robbing from gradually and gently. Good old Joe Nemeth, I don't know that he knows what he's saying, or Die Kid Dynamite, I don't know if he knows what he's saying. And everybody who has any input into the people's hearts and minds is out there saying, get insurance on your insurance on your insurance. This is the society we are into. And everybody is pointing to Dennis Knows. Your microphone is open. Thank you.
Uhuru, uhuru. Very powerful and outstanding program tonight. A lot of education. Colonialism, capitalism, and imperialism. Too few standing. The catastrophe that we're facing now, just like we saw the day that Barbados, after 12 midnight, was allowed to not have the queen there anymore. But that is a game. There's a bourgeois neo-colonizer still running Barbados. Right. We talked about the 30 million facing eviction in this country alone. And when we talked about a debt ceiling that they may or may not make, we all may lose incomes, right? But we will be the first. We will be the first put out. I want to point out tonight point number six of the platform. We want the immediate and unconditional release of all black people who are presently locked down in United States prisons. We believe that all the African men and women who are locked down in the United States concentration camps, commonly known as prisons, are there due to decisions, laws, and circumstances which were created by aliens and foreigners for their own benefit and as a means of genocidal or colonialistic control. We believe that these decisions, laws, and circumstances were created and are enforced without our consent and are therefore illegitimate. We believe that the African men and women who are locked down in these concentration camps are victims of U.S. colonialist ruling class justice, which means or maintains our enslavement and terrorizes our people, and that they should therefore be released immediately to just representatives of our struggle for liberation, independence, and socialist democracy. In other words, put them back in our hands. Let them go. You let the terrorists that terrorized the Capitol get out of jail free. You let Rittenhouse get out of jail free. You let us be defamed, the preachers. I'm sorry to say these preachers who still want to keep on preaching to some famed, what, rubbing Aladdin's lamp. Who get up and hold hands and pray to something false up in the sky when we need a revolution. This is no longer any time when we need to sit back hoping and wishing and thinking that they're going to do something different for us than they've ever done. They've never done anything for us. They kept us captive. They kept us in prison. They kept murdering us, and they still murder us day in and day out. When do we get tired? When do we start standing up? Too few people standing up for revolution. Right now, this is the time to seize the time for the revolution as we die in a revolution. Those of us that stand up pretty much get shut down every time. They'll cut off your program. They'll shut you down. They'll shut off your communications. They shut off your voice out there on the public sidewalk, on the street. They'll find a reason because what? They create the laws that kill us. They create everything that is so inhumane. There is no Second Amendment rights for Africans in this country. There is no Second Amendment rights for those who would stand with us fighting in solitude or solidarity. They take your guns. They break your legs, and then they call you a cripple, as Malcolm would say. I want to go to point number seven. We want complete amnesty for all African political prisoners and prisoners of war from United States prisons or their immediate release to any friendly country which will accept them and give them political asylum. We believe that the United States prisons are also used as an illegitimate tool for torturing, murdering, and holding captive those courageous daughters and sons of Africa who through their patriotic deeds or spoken or written words in support of the cause of our liberation have become political prisoners and prisoners of war. That's what we got up in there now. We believe, along with the majority of the people of the world, that it is the duty of the colonized and enslaved to resist at all costs slavery and colonialism, and to fight for socialism. And those who do so are patriots and heroines and heroes and should be held in the highest esteem. They're in prison right now. Some of us are going to prison because of what we stand for, what we believe, but we're fighting more and more in solidarity. Comrade Ralph, I love you all, and Sister Betty. You stand stern and firm all the time. You don't back down. And all those that I've heard, Sister Lamb, others, Nellie Belly, Professor Louis, I commend you all. I salute you all. You all are our predecessors, and we stand firm together. That's what revolution is all about. Revolution is coming together. Revolution is not pretty. It's not some nicety. It is calling it what it is, and then taking that true affirmative action, not affirmative in the way that they meant, but affirmed action that we must take. If that means that we need to go on and build our own army, we do. If that means we need to build our own institutions, we do. If that means we need to stop dealing with an enemy that does not want us even in this world, we need to get away from that enemy. We need to get selfish like they are and get away from them and defend ourselves, defend our children. They murdered Malcolm X's daughter. They murder us all. And I'm tired, and we all should be tired. We all should be hot, mad, and so hot and mad that we're ready to fume and blow up on anybody that would come in and break our institutions that we would build up, break up our revolution. Everybody should be hot and mad. Anytime we see a brother or a sister get arrested, we should be hot and mad and paying attention. Don't turn away. You're a chump. You're a punk. You're a coward when you turn the other way, because it's going to be you next. They're going to get your mother. They'll get your father. They'll take your son. They'll take your daughter. They'll take your niece, your nephew. And all we do is we have nothing but times of gloom and doom and grief, and we're always crying, but we don't take the next step forward. Then they pay off those that they want to shut up, say, well, you know, we're sorry we killed your son, but we're going to give you $25 million. Then what do you do there? You don't invest your money properly. The same thing that the brother was talking about earlier, capitalism. We need to invest our dollars where the dollars count. We need our own stores. We need our own vegetables. We need our own gardening. We need our own cowboys. We need our own everything, but we need to unite. Right now is the hot and proper time to unite, y'all. It doesn't matter. If you're standing in solidarity with us, we with you. All skin folk, it's your kin folk. And if they're an enemy, they need to be taken care of and taken out. Uhuru. All power to the people.
Uhuru. Freedom. Thank you so much, Dennis Knowles. And next up.
Before we go to Mr. Gwynn and Dolores, we want to bring in Brother Henry Higgins. Thank you for waiting, guys. Hang in there with us. Don't go anywhere.
Thank you for this opportunity, Sister Betty and
Brother Ralph. Hey,
Brother,
the microphone
Ralph
is open.
Okay, thank you. I want to alert the audience to the fact that on December 9th, there's a demonstration in Philly to acknowledge and protest the 40th anniversary of Mumia's false imprisonment. And for those persons interested or able to go, I would suggest that you visit the website www.freemumia.com for details on how to arrange travel arrangements. I want to also share with you excerpts from a speech made in January of 2007 by a brother named Saladin Muhammad from the Black Workers League in North Carolina. And he's offering a critique of the status of the working class in the U.S. at that time. And so he begins with the notion, dividing the U.S. working class. U.S. bourgeois democracy defines the electoral arena as the sole basis for obtaining political power. Oppressed nationalities are taught to view themselves politically mainly as voting blocks to align with either of the corporate parties to bargain for rights and advances in society. The appointment of a few token black and Latinx misleaders to government posts and corporate boards and the existence on the books of civil rights legislation has not stopped the racist scapegoating and genocidal direction of the U.S. government and corporate power, nor has it changed the reality of national oppression. These token appointments have not stopped the elimination of basic democratic and human rights. White workers, the most convinced about bourgeois democracy within the working class, which is further encouraged by the trade unions, see these voting blocks of oppression, of oppressed nationalities as a threat to the white skin privilege and associate the economic problems they face with increased immigration and the past social programs won by the African-American struggles of the 1960s and 70s. This ability to oppress all of the oppressed nationalities and to keep them divided on the one hand and to divide white workers from all oppressed national workers on the other has been one of the main strengths of U.S. imperialism in forestalling its demise from a revolutionary movement within its national borders. What is required to effectively change U.S. imperialism in this period are working-class-led movements with the potential to challenge and break with national chauvinism and build multinational and international solidarity, solidarity that goes beyond the bourgeois margins of acceptable mass protests to directly challenge U.S. economic and political power. The African-American liberation movement, in the form of the civil rights movement during the McCarthy period following World War II, is one such example. The year-long Montgomery, Alabama bus boycott in 1955 helped to break the paralysis and the defensive state of the left and social movements, which were under attack as communities, as communists, and as a threat to U.S. national security. This was the era that witnessed the United States government execution of the Rosenbergs on charges of being communist spies. And I want to leave it there, but to indicate to people that we have to determine our position in society and also to form alliances with other groups of people to work to assure and secure our liberation. And so I want to thank the opportunity for speaking tonight.
Thank you so much for that, Henry Higgins. To sum it up, as Fannie Lou Hamer said, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, and we're saying we're here to do a little something about it. Thanks again. Next up, Gwen Goodwin, your microphone is open.
Hi, everybody. If the phone dropped, it's not my fault. Phone is really giving me a hard time today. But what I wanted to speak about was the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict. I just wanted to say, obviously I thought it was appalling, but I also found it appalling that people didn't really understand what happened here. And I was speaking on WNYC radio about this, and I compared it to this. Say a guy came into your child's public school, and he was carrying an automatic weapon. And say the principal came out of the office, and the principal even had a gun, just like Trump said, all schools should have teachers with guns. And that principal went after that gunman because he assumed he was coming there to shoot these children. He had an automatic weapon with him. So he tried to wrestle the gun away from the gunman, and the principal got shot. And the gunman then went on to tell the police it wasn't his fault, because the principal was trying to wrestle the gun away from him and he needed to defend himself. That's exactly what happened the day that Kyle Rittenhouse went to Kenosha. Kyle Rittenhouse went to Kenosha with an automatic weapon that his mother bought for him. He traveled 25 miles to get there. He crossed state lines. He had 30 rounds of ammunition in the gun. He dressed up to look like a policeman, as a matter of fact, an undercover policeman, because he had blue rubber gloves on, and I'm familiar with those gloves because my husband was a postal worker, and that's what they give out to a lot of government workers, whether keep your hands clean from the letters or police, everybody gets those gloves issued to them by the government. So he had them on. He has baseball cap turned around backwards. And, you know, when I looked at him running next to the policeman, I don't know that the policeman didn't know whether or not he was one of a policeman or just some kid. But it was clear to me that he came in with a loaded gun that you use in the military into a crowded area of people that were unarmed for the most part. And somebody did the righteous thing. Somebody wanted to be a hero. And he tried to get the gun away from him because, like every normal person in the world, most people thought he was there to shoot at them. Isn't that what you would think if you were at a rally and all of a sudden somebody came in with an automatic weapon? Wouldn't you assume that he was there to hurt other people? And wouldn't you like it if somebody tried to get that gun away from him because you did not know what he was going to do with it? So when I listened to this trial, what I found stunning was they didn't speak about step one, where he traveled there with a gun and that he came in to a crowded area with lots of people that were unarmed. That was number two. And number three, he had the gun pointed at somebody, and then that's when that person tried to take it away. And that's what they called self-defense. But it's not self-defense because you created the problem. You can't go into a crowd like that and bring a gun and then say you had to defend yourself. So, of course, I thought it was extraordinarily unfair. But the reason why I thought the verdict was really, really damaging is because of stare decisis. And that means that we have set a new precedent in America. And that means that it's really A-okay to go into a crowd with an automatic weapon, and if you happen to shoot them and you kill them, it's okay. You were simply defending yourself. And I think that verdict carried so much weight with it that so many Americans don't understand. They're simply too ignorant to understand it. And I heard the outlandish Congress people saying that they wanted to hire him. They thought he was a hero. They wanted to hire him as an intern to work for them. And I heard Trump talk about what a hero he was. I mean, how misguided, how criminal can you be? So I just wanted to discuss that tonight. And I also wanted to say that I'm glad that Joel brought up his points that he did about the monopoly. And the last thing I want to say is I don't think that I don't think any longer that we're in a country where you can just take civil action or you can just have your revolution. No, it is going to have to be a worldwide revolution because the powers that be that are monopolies, they're smaller and smaller with more and more power and money, and they want something in this world, and they want the population to be pared down. And so I know a lot of people don't believe in the vaccine being anything but a good thing, but you still ought to listen to other people out there. Dr. Richard McCullough is a very, very good source of information, and there's a lot of great people that are on Gary Noll every day who are doctors and nurses, and they're discussing the facts. So that's what I'm going to leave you with tonight. I thank you.
Well, thank you so much for that. And as I said, we're going to have to devote a program to this COVID issue because we have not really scratched the surface, for it goes back to biological warfare. I'll let it go at that because we have people still yet to give us their wisdom. Tom Syracuse. Oh, Dolores Cox, your microphone is open.
Hi, and thank you. In yesterday's New York Times, there was an article which I found very interesting. It's entitled Guantanamo Bay, Beyond the Prison. And some of what the article reveals is that Guantanamo Bay opened as a wartime prison in January of 2002 with Afghanistan detainees, which was 4 months after the September 11, 2001 attacks on the World Trade Center. It now has 6,000 residents and the feel and amenities of a college campus. It's a naval base that has the trappings of small-town America, a gated community, and somewhat of a police state. but it's a military naval base more than a big prison. It has a school system for the children of sailors and contractors, bars and ball fields, playgrounds, beaches with barbecue grills, pleasure boats to rent the bay, swimming pools, and it noted that Guantanamo Bay is a U.S.-controlled body of water. Sailors and other Defense Department employees on assignment can bring their families there and live in suburban-style neighborhoods. The base has a campus-style radio station also called Radio Gitmo, and it has a written slogan that says, Rocking in Fidel's Backyard. There's also a golf course and a bingo parlor. Now, it has, in addition, the only McDonald's that's in Cuba. It opened in the 1980s. Has a rotating staff of 1,500 National Guard soldiers on tour of duty who are responsible for the remaining 39 prisoners there. And miles of fences surround the base, which is in southeast Cuba. Very little Spanish is spoken on the base, it says, except for a unit of Puerto Rican National Guards who are on duty. Tagalog and Creole are more prevalent because one-third of the residents are Filipinos and Jamaicans. They're hired by Pentagon contractors and serve as the backbone of the labor force. They do construction, make and serve meals in restaurants, and work as cashiers in the commissary. They change beds at guest headquarters. They'll cut color hair in the salon and offer sailing lessons at the marina. None are allowed to bring their family, though, and they live in separate housing areas from the employers. There's also a small shopping mall with a Subway sandwich restaurant, bank, souvenir shop, grocery store, liquor store, and a department store. It mentions that cars that happen to be on the road at 8 o'clock in the morning have to stop when the Star-Spangled Banner is being broadcast. Single soldiers live in dormitories. There are home furnishings for everybody on the base. Household goods and foods are delivered from Jacksonville, Florida, by barge. And it mentions, lastly, that congressional restrictions make it impossible to transfer the last dozens of prison detainees to the U.S. for any reason. So that's what I wanted to contribute tonight. Thank you.
Thank you so much for that, Dolores. And I want to remind everyone that tomorrow night on 99.5, the call-in number is 212-209-2877, for we will be doing our program on Pacifica Radio. For the last several years, when you have been speaking, your voice has been carried on 25 various associate stations of the network of Pacifica. Our voice is going far and wide. But now we're going to center our voice on New York City. Not totally, because we're opening with an in-depth report. Our first guest will be Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. from Chicago as they prepare for their 50th anniversary recognition of the martyrdom and the greatness of Chairman Fred Hampton Sr. And we will be reminded of our greatest weapon is organizing. Organize, organize, organize. Because this government of the United States feared Chairman Fred Hampton Sr. because of his ability to organize, and if I will use the expression, the common man, the boys in the hood, the guys in the scratching to make a living. Some spent money foolishly, but we must understand that's the only place where we can spend money freely. That is buying a Nazi mobile. You try to buy a house, you try to put money in the bank for a business, the first question is, where did it come from? But they don't ask where the money of capitalism came from in terms of slavery, imperialism, drugs, etc. And so he was able to organize the victims of a colonialist system. Very dangerous. And so see you tomorrow night and it's going to be a short program. We're going to have to shut people down. It's 5 minutes except for, or they try to do it, except for the person who are the main guest, Chairman Fred Hampton, Jr. of Chicago. CD tomorrow night. Love you all, and good night. Could break all the change over me.